Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Vice Admiral Matthew Nathan, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Geo Patterson. I talked to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies, branches of the government, and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you at Navy Medicine using partnerships and collaborating, and I think this dovetails with jointness as well, to improve operations and program outcomes?
Clearly, the more you can learn from, share, partner, team up, become joint with other marquee organizations, the more you're going to accelerate the ability to provide care in a professional and in a cost-effective way. We want to leverage this country's great patriotic desires. We want to leverage this the academic institutions, the private sector, who I have to say, everywhere I go, be it any organization I talk to in the private or academic sector, all they want to know is how they can help. They really do. And many of these in the past have sort of been parochial and very protective of their research or protective of their grant money or protective of what they're doing because they don't want somebody to steal their thunder. But when I come in, they say, you know what? For you, we want to be totally transparent. If there's something we're doing which you think can help, please let us know. They also enjoy the give and the take from the military because we have so many experiences that we can bring to them. It'll probably be military-based providers along with private sector, but it'll probably be a center of gravity of military-based providers who will discover the vaccine for malaria. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I think that this kind of rising tide lifts everybody's boats. We're very interested in partnering in what we were talking about before in traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress. There are some places who have been doing this in the private and academic sectors for years and years and years and are just outstanding at it. What they haven't had is exposure to the kinds of injuries that we're seeing in the military. So they're desperately interested in getting engaged with us. What kind of injuries do they see? Motor vehicle accidents, gunshot wounds, somebody falling off a ladder. They have not seen people standing 20 feet away from a massive explosion and receiving that kind of concussive blast. So that's a whole new kind of head injury that we don't get in America. We don't get in the world because people are succumbing to motor vehicle injuries and gunshots and hitting their head at a fraternity party, but they're not being blown up. And so these organizations are vitally interested in seeing our results, our scans, partnering with us, sending some of their people to work in our hospitals, and inviting some of our people to work in their hospitals so that we can do this. I'm encouraged by the collaboration that's going on. I'm not yet satisfied by it. It's still, in my opinion, still in its infancy, and it can be much more robust. But we're getting there. The flywheel's starting to turn. And I think that those kinds of cooperative agreements, along with the jointness where the Army and the Air Force and the Navy all throw in together with the VA, federal medicine, I think is becoming more joint, more altruistic. And the cooperation we're seeing with the private sector is significantly better than it's ever been, but it's not where we need it yet.
Admiral, I'd like to transition now to the future. What are some of the major opportunities and challenges that Navy medicine will encounter in the future? And how do you envision your office will need to evolve over the next couple of years to meet those challenges?
Thanks, Gio. It's a question that I and my team wrestle with every day. Again, getting back to where do we think the puck is going to be so we can skate to it. There is more and more of an expectation because of our track record so far that Mr. and Mrs. America, who has a son or a daughter, or a brother or a sister, or a husband or a wife who is somewhere in the armed services, there is more and more of an expectation that if something happens to them any place in the world, they'll get the kind of care that if they had had that same thing happen on the steps at Hopkins or the steps at Bethesda. And so I am vitally interested in figuring out how to translocate care in using virtual care, using technology, using telemedicine, to bring that expectation true. I think that the other great challenge for us is the socioeconomic challenge of the cost of healthcare. And how do we get that under control and at the same time not sacrifice some of the gains we've made. And so what I've told my people for the future is we need to do a complete sort of soup-to-nuts look at all our infrastructure in Navy medicine, because it's built on, and antiquated is too strong a word, but it's built on a premise, an existing premise, that lots of buildings and brick and mortar is good. And I'm not so sure it is anymore. And I think if you look at other marquee private sector healthcare systems, you'll see more of them and more of them going to really concentrating the gravitas on ambulatory care facilities and virtual medicine. And we need to at least be even with that, if not, I think, leave it beyond. And so I've asked my folks to take a hard look at what is tomorrow's sailor, what is tomorrow's Marine, what is their family going to need? And that's the other big issue, family care. World War I and II, most service members didn't have families. These days, most do. The family is a critical part of the care, not just for taking care of the family, but for making sure that the service member feels comfortable and can do their job. So we're looking at family programs. And I'm often asked about, you have pediatricians and OBGYN doctors in the Navy or in the Armed Services. Do you really need them? I mean, would we lose a war if we didn't have military pediatricians? The answer, we probably wouldn't lose a war, but my military staff brings something to the game, an understanding of the military family, of the ethos, of the challenges of the military and deployment, as well as, when necessary, we're doing more and more humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. And I don't fault it, but I recognize the fact that I can't grab a civilian pediatrician who's in the middle of a practice and say, I need you to be in Haiti in 48 hours because the country's just destroyed itself through an earthquake. They'll say, I'll get there when I can, but it may be weeks, whereas my people can be there. When the Haitian earthquake went down, we had the hospital ship Comfort underway within 72 hours. With a crew that went down there and performed miraculous resuscitative and crushing injury surgeries to sort of get things going. So that's what I'm looking at, is how can I meet the head-on challenge of virtual care access and reward health more than trying to reward the health care. Provide the health care when necessary, but the goal should be, let's keep our patients healthy.
So, Admiral Nathan, what advice would you give someone who's thinking about a career in public service, whether it's military service or medicine?
Well, I think anybody who wants to go into medicine or the healthcare professions, be it dentistry or nursing or a corpsman or a medic, you know, already has sort of defined themselves as somebody who wants to make a difference. Mm-hmm. When I talk to young people today, and I talk to large groups, they're, as you can imagine, they're a little mystified by the military. They think of us in terms of, okay, you're out there with the Marines in the desert slugging it out in a combat zone, or I've heard you have a military hospital, or maybe you're on a submarine. Isn't that kind of weird? And I was that kid years ago. I was on a military scholarship to pay for medical school. I had no plans whatsoever to stay in the military one day longer than my obligation. To repay my school loans. I got in and I realized that the people I was serving with, the people I was working with, were dedicated, altruistic, and I enjoyed the different venues of federal medicine. I enjoyed being sent occasionally to a place like Guam or Japan or Cuba or Europe. I enjoyed the aspect of, you know, when I first had to go with the Marines, I didn't know what to think. I didn't know anything about the Marines except I'd watched Jack Webb movies. And I went there with great trepidation, and it was a tour of a lifetime. I learned a respect for a unit of dedication and a group of men and women who personify professionalism and the unit above themselves. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to sea, great trepidation about that. And then I went to sea and I realized what an amazing environment to practice in and what a challenging environment to try to bring great care in and what changes we can make. And so I would tell any young person today, first of all, I think the health professions are a noble occupation and profession because you're putting service above self. And secondly, if you want to do it in the venue of the federal healthcare system, in my case, the military healthcare system, I think you'd be very surprised at the numbers of opportunities and the dynamic range that you can practice in. As I said, I often talk to my friends who I trained with in the civilian sector many, many years ago, who are wonderful family citizens and physicians and have wonderful practices. But I noticed at the end of it, Michael, when I talked to them, all they want to do is talk about me. It doesn't take me long to catch up with what they've been doing, and I'm interested in what they're doing. But what I do has so much variety to it that they know there's a whole thing that's occurred in the years since we've talked. And so I enjoy that aspect of it. And so I would commend that to anybody, recognizing that for some people you may come in and do this for a little while, and for others you may do it for quite a while. But I think it's a way to give back. I think it's a way to put service above self. I think it's a way to feel, as you could in any profession, I don't care what it is, as long as you've given your all to it and done it altruistically, that at the end of the day, you've made a difference. And that's what I tell young people.
Well, sir, I want to thank you for joining us today. But more importantly, Gio and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Michael, Gio, it's been a pleasure meeting with you today.
Thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Vice Admiral Matthew Nathan, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy. My co-host from IBM has been Gio Patterson. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.